This is the all-new talk radio, Freedom 106.5. Speak your mind. Speak your
mind. We have a special interview at this point in time. We've been having several discussions on the station about gender-based violence, 16 days of activism. We continue those discussions now. We welcome to our studio here this morning a gentleman. He's going to speak to us about protecting children from abuse by educating them about their rights. We welcome to our studios this morning the CEO of Heroes Foundation, that's Lawrence Arjun. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Satish, and good morning, Trinidad and Tobago.
It's nice to have you with us here this morning. The latest installment of an ongoing discussion that we've been having on the station regarding gender-based violence and issues around that. It's been some, how do I describe it? Some eye-opening discussions. Mm-hmm. For many reasons. Mm-hmm. We hear a lot about gender-based violence, and most of us have a broad understanding of what this means and some of those things. But when you delve deep, mm-hmm. there are some things that really make you raise your eyebrows and wonder, well, are we really aware? Do we really know what's going on? Mm-hmm. And this installment focuses on children. Let's begin by getting to know you just a bit. CEO Heroes Foundation, tell us a bit about the Heroes Foundation and the work that they've been doing.
Sure, gladly. I mean, Heroes has been around for the last 20 years, empowering children and youth to find a hero within themselves. And for us, that is helping them to find the courage and the ability to overcome whatever challenges they may be facing, to unlock their fullest potential, but also to contribute to building a better Trinidad and Tobago. And we do that in three main ways. One, we create safe spaces and we leverage technology to offer them development programs and mentorship opportunities. We connect them as much as we can to real-world opportunities, things like leadership development, internship jobs, career development, and those things. And really big for us is creating platforms where the voices of children and youth can be heard and can lead on causes important to them. Mm-hmm. This year in particular, with the support of the Spotlight Initiative, we have been focusing heavily on eliminating violence and abuse against children. In one way, it is educating the children. We work with over 500 local and migrant children. We're in 31 secondary schools across Trinidad and Tobago. And we've been educating them about understanding violence, understanding abuse, understanding GBV. How do you get help? How do you make reports? And then what they've done is they would have identified problems, first of all, that they are experiencing in their schools or their communities and come up with solutions. So we would have helped them create project plans, for those solutions, and they have been implementing projects across the country over the last 3 months targeting issues like bullying, school violence, child abuse, gender-based violence, sexual harassment, and anger management, because children understand a lot of things and oftentimes adults don't listen to children. So we find that children are often silenced when they speak up about things that concern them, things that make them feel scared, things that make them feel at risk. But if we spend time listening to children, we'll realize that they understand what is happening and they have ideas and they have solutions to a lot of the problems that we see. School fighting is just one example of that, where for the children, they are asking for avenues to express themselves, get help with their frustration, especially coming out after the pandemic. So the more we listen to them, which is what we try to do at Heroes, create those spaces where they can share with us their experiences. The more we listen, the more we can understand the causes of the problems and be able to address those problems.
Well, unfortunately, we have an education system that teaches you to obey as opposed to teaches you to question and challenge and inquire. I mean, in days gone by, a child who was inquisitive could have been classified as disobedient and insolent and disrespectful and all of the words that you could go along, because that's what the education system basically did. It molded you to conform.
Yep.
Now, and I was told some time ago that when you have intelligent children don't conform.
Mm-hmm.
They question, they challenge, not because they want to be difficult, because that's just their nature.
Mm-hmm.
And that, if you don't have an educator who understands that, you can find yourself in a lot of problems.
Mm-hmm.
But I asked this question yesterday when we were dealing with other representatives about the gender-based violence, dealing with women. in particular. Mm-hmm. As to, it may seem like an obvious question, but getting into it might raise one or two specters that people may not have considered before. What constitutes abuse of a child?
So there are a few things that we've found over this last year working with these children and from their feedback. And that is, child abuse is very present in Trinidad and Tobago. We may talk about it in private, but we don't speak about it in actionable terms, and we don't speak about it in ways to actually address the problems. It's often conflated with discipline, and we sometimes justify abuse as discipline, but generally with abuse is multifaceted, and it's often accompanied by the different forms. So for instance, you're going to get physical abuse being accompanied by emotional abuse, or verbal abuse that is often accompanied by psychological abuse. And then we have a lot of financial abuse taking place. Mm. I mean, Children's Authority consistently puts out figures. I mean, they get about over 4,000 cases of abuse reported to them annually. The top of the list is neglect. So children being neglected, children not being taken care of, not having supervision, not getting food, not being able to go to school. The second highest number of cases is sexual abuse, child sexual abuse. Because coming back to your point about the education system, a child cannot make a sensible decision when it comes to sex. They do not have that information. They do not understand the risks, the challenges, the implications of sex beyond just a sexual act. Because there's the emotional side of it, there's the psychological side of it, and then, of course, there's all the physical side of it and the scares of STDs and all those other things. But there's an emotional part of sexual activities that children are not made aware of or understand, because we just do not teach those things in our education system. But as one 13-year-old girl told us, whatever we are not learning from credible sources, there's some man in we inbox telling us what they think we want to hear. And oftentimes, mm-hmm. it's about what we need to do with them.
What age group are we talking about here?
So we work with secondary students, 11 to 17.
Okay. The reason why I'm asking is this. We've come in years gone by from situations where it was not unusual for persons aged 13 and 14 and 15 and 16 to be married,
uh-huh.
and to move on with productive lives. When did that change, and why did it change? Because you're talking age. If you're talking uh-huh. age category, and you just raised the issue of a 13-year-old, uh-huh. I mean, history is littered with instances where you've had persons uh-huh. at that age in years gone by. I'm not uh-huh. saying that it should happen, eh? Uh-huh. Don't get me wrong, for the people listening. But there was a fundamental change in the situation back then to the situation now. Mm-hmm. How much of it had to do with when you got yourself involved with somebody back then at that age mm-hmm. was marriage and was some mm-hmm. sense of stability, and now it's promiscuity? Mm-hmm. How much of it is related?
So I'll say a few things in line with that. One, at one point in time, history said that slavery was okay,
right.
that indentureship was okay, that it was okay to kill people and take their property. It was okay to claim other people's countries for your own if you had enough military power to do so. So our past may not necessarily always be right, especially as we get more information. At Heroes, we focus a lot on the psychosocial development of mm-hmm. a child. How a child understands themselves, how they understand their thoughts, their feelings, their emotions, their dreams, their aspirations, their strengths, their challenges. How do you understand self? Right. That is the fundamental part of what we do at Heroes. It's also something that is not generally the focus when it comes to education. Back to your point about we're focused on passing exams to come out to do something, as opposed to understanding who you are, to become resilient to changes around you and to become adaptable to changes.
Mm-hmm.
As we understand more about self and the psychosocial development of people, we understand that there are certain things that you need time to understand and grow. Children need time to understand their feelings, to be able to articulate their feelings. Our first module is self-awareness. And this secondary school age group,
mm-hmm.
I think, are the most disconnected to the other generations than ever before, but the most connected digitally than ever before. And they're constantly facing information coming to them from social media. They live on social media. They live in the digital world. They are most adaptable to the digital world.
Mm-hmm.
The challenge is we have a society of consumers, and our children are shaped by what they consume on social media. I mean, we've seen children with 50,000, 100,000 followers on TikTok, children in secondary school. And the content that you get coming out there is really guided by what they think is cool and hype. And for a child who may not understand the implications of some of the dances or songs that they go along with, on poses that they go along with on social media, that can create problems. Because a 13-year-old is dealing with school. They're dealing with home challenges. They've went through a pandemic where they had to transition to online without their parents understanding how online really works. And they're also dealing with relationships, as in, and I don't mean romantic or sexual relationships, I mean relationships with people. We know relationships are hard. Adults have a lot of trouble managing relationships, building relationships. Adults have gone through a lot of challenges because of the pandemic. Children have it worse because they're often neglected with support. So we would have had children who've gone through the last 2 years trying to do work online because their parents may not see them doing something. They may think, well, okay, well, just child not doing nothing, go and do something, go and do some work, go do some chores. Children also need time to think and to reflect and to be alone, because as adults we know we need that too. If you're in our house and you and your siblings and everybody competing for everything, and you have to do your chores and somebody's always on your case, where do you get that time to think? And time to think is really important, to understand what you're being told. And if we continue to put pressures on children without creating that space where they have the opportunity to process what is coming to them, get credible information that is coming to them to help them make safe decisions, we're going to continue repeating the problems and the challenges that we're seeing.
Whenever we have discussions on the program about children, I often rely on some of my own experiences, some of the discussions that I have with parents and everything else, because those are real. Those are not, I mean, the stuff you learn in class and what you read in books is relevant, but some of these life experiences are really eye-openers as to how things have changed. Generation after generation, there is always progress, one way or the other, whether it's good or bad, or however you decide that you want to categorize it. And this thing about relationships and children, I don't know if to say it's much more serious than some of us would take into consideration, but it's real. I was having a discussion with some parents recently. Their child is six. I want people to listen to this. I'm making this up. This is an actual conversation that happened. And the child was playing and talking about friends. And she was saying that she had about six friends in school, and that one of her friends has a boyfriend. Well, they listened to this, said this is six. And that the boyfriend was somebody else's boyfriend, and they break up. And I couldn't help but sit and just think to myself how with each generation comes differences that we may not understand. Because when you were six, to the mature population listening in, that kind of thing was unheard of in years gone by, but it's a reality of today. I'm not saying that these children are involved in sexual relationships, but they understand enough to consider themselves being in a relationship at six. That's a fundamental psychological change that has happened over the years. And let's just add six more years onto that. That's 12. That's where the average age of people getting involved with one another begins at this point in time. But I think we're drifting away from what we're here to talk about, and that is the abuse, even though it's an interesting discussion. And for those of you locked on to us, if you'd like to be a part of the discussion, feel free to give us a call. Let's take it back to the abuse and some of the more prevalent issues that we confront.
Coming back to your question about abuse. So abuse is generally the reduction of a person's rights.
Right.
How do you diminish a person's rights and self-esteem? And that could happen in a number of ways. Physically, emotionally, psychologically, financially, sexually. How do you take away someone's autonomy and ability to choose for themselves and make decisions for themselves by exerting your power or your privilege around them? And when it comes to children, we've seen it in that we've had a number of disclosures from us about sexual abuse and physical abuse, of sexual abuse from people in the family, from sexual abuse from people in the homes. And coming back to that point about a child not being able to make a decision about sex, children do not make decisions on their own about sex. An adult goes in and has some sort of interaction with a child to convince them that sex is okay. But another challenge when we look at abuse is in the case of reporting, because we spoke to the children about abuse and their perspectives of abuse. generally, the children that we've worked with do not believe that violence and abuse is okay. So if we take violence separate and apart from abuse as a physical violence alone, we tend to accept violence generally because it's part of our society.
When we say violence, what do we mean by violence?
Because hitting, slapping, fighting, physical violence. So let's look at physical violence.
Okay.
We see that around us so much that sometimes we may think that, well, that is what it is. But in reality, it's not normal. Violence and abuse are not normal parts of things. So fighting, bullying, catcalling on the road, those things aren't normal. Those are things that we've come to accept or experience, but they aren't normal. The other thing is that violence and abuse really is everybody's business. And if you see something, you should really say something. Because a lot of times when we talk about violence and abuse, people know. The conversations happen in the community, the conversations happen in the home, in the schools. People know that things are happening, but nothing is done. There's no action coming out of it. And as the children would have identified, there are questions about, well, what happens after you report. So yes, I make a report, but are the perpetrators held? Is somebody brought to justice? Am I really going to feel safe after? And there are a lot of points to think about after that. Because what we've seen is, the information that we've gotten from the Child Protection Unit, is that, you know, and even the Children's Authority, when you make a report sometimes, so a child comes to us and discloses to us, we are legally obligated to report that incident to the Children's Authority, to the police. That is the law. But then when they do the investigation now, the child needs the support of the parents to continue. Sometimes they decide to not continue, to not share information, to not press charges against it, because there's a lot of other kind of abuse that is happening. So in the household, you may have a woman benefiting from the support of a man who may be abusing a child, and they may not want to talk about that abuse, or they may not want to get the man in trouble because that is their livelihood provider. But that has implications on the child. Sometimes it's, do I feel safe enough reporting somebody who may be known in the community, who may be involved in other criminal activities in the community, or do I even just want to go into the emotional drama of having to go through an investigation, or do I just want to keep the child away safely? The majority of cases that are reported aren't followed through because of no follow through from with information to go after the perpetrator.
I understand, but from a country perspective, we know that Children's Authority, they report thousands of cases a year. But for every case that is reported, there may be a significant number of others that aren't.
Yes.
How bad is the situation, really, if we were to take that into consideration?
I think if everybody thinks about what they've heard in conversations, in communities, of the things that you hear about this one and that one, and you know, this one used to get licked, this one husband beating her, that something happened in there that not right. When you think about the conversations that we've all heard in communities, it makes you really question what is the reality of the situation. If we take 4,000 cases of child abuse being reported every year, we know that there are a number of cases that aren't reported. We have had children tell us that if they go to the schools and try to talk to the teacher, they try to talk to the guidance counselor about some sort of abuse, they are told, well, don't tell it to me because I have to report it. And they don't want to do that. So we know that there's a huge number of things that aren't reported, but how do we start changing that? And I think to change that, we have to help people understand that there are avenues to get help. Because I think a lot of times people don't report because they think, well, nothing is going to come from it. Who is going to help me?
Well, I understand that. But here's what it may be a real predicament. You have adults, when they face sexual abuse, are reluctant to take the decision to report it for whatever reason. We're talking about children. The pressure on a child must be 100 times more than on an adult, because a child doesn't know. I've been reading, and there's a prevalence of these types of attacks being done by somebody the child knows.
Yes.
It's never necessarily just a random stranger. And there's a trust issue there that this child now has to confront as to, who do you trust to tell that, listen, this thing is happening to me and I feel that what's happening to me is wrong. Now, identifying, and we're almost out of time, unfortunately, identifying it is one thing. The persons who may be confronted by situations related to what we're talking about might either know of a child that is probably being abused, or know of someone who's involved or whatever else, what do they do?
So to answer that last question first, call the authority. Call Children's Authority, the number is 996. Call the police, the number is 999. Make a report. Even if you do not have all of the information, call them, make a report with all of the information that you can, because somebody will be there to investigate. Yes, I know we have challenges with the system, of the system being under-resourced and us questioning the capability and the competency sometimes of the system, but there are people in the system who are trying and want to make a difference. So call. The first thing you need to do is report. Coming back to the point about children, children are generally more trusting than adults. And really the onus is on adults to create the safe spaces for children. Because if we want to have a better future in Trinidad and Tobago, we have to create systems that are going to allow children to change the way that things are done when they take over. We have to see children really as the future, listen to them, invest in them, support them, create safe spaces, create safe systems for them. We know your point. We know the challenges that adults face. So if we know the challenges that adults face, then we can make a better system for children at a time when they are a lot more trusting, when they are still developing. We can help children. I mean, one of the points that they raised is that as a society, we need to know what is right or wrong. As children, we need to know what is right or wrong. And they think that adults need a lot of re-education about what is right or wrong. So if we know that there is opportunity to do that, because the child is in this development phase of their life where we can help them understand what is right or wrong, how to get help, how to address problems, we need to be investing into that. We need to be investing into programs that is going to focus on the psychosocial support of children. We're going to, coming back to the education system point, we have to really think about what are we educating children for, and do we want to educate them for jobs that are redundant in a system that needs to be adjusted or overhauled, or do we need to educate these children to become resilient children, children who can overcome challenges, adapt to challenges, children who have a strong value system and know what is right or wrong and know how to have this collective responsibility where together we aspire, together we achieve. It comes back to that. How do we build a society where children who are going to be our future leaders, who we want to change the country, feel safe enough to share and then get the support they need?
Sergeant, that's, we're going to have to leave it here this morning. We are out of time. Pretty interesting discussion with the CEO of Heroes Foundation, Lawrence Arjun, protecting children from abuse by educating them about their rights. All part of this ongoing discussion we've been having on the station, 16 Days of Activism.
Listen and stream the all-new talk radio Freedom 106.5 for the only talk that matter.